Blog Talk Radio.
Where the screen sticks and you can't stop the goddamn music.
I just thought we were getting a little bit extended cut tonight, you know, rubbing it in a little bit. The only reason we have to listen to that music is because you won last year.
It's the album version of the theme song. Oh, thank you, Jazar.
It's the 12-incher?
Yes, right.
Wait a minute.
Breaking Bad.
We just dated ourselves again.
12-incher has no sexual overtones. Please. Do not take that the wrong way. Look up Google 12-inch disco, kids. This is in much less detail the podcast on a Friday night, September the 25th, 2015. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and we're already punch drunk because it's been a long day for both of us.
It has.
We have NFL Week 3 picks hot, fresh, and ready to go right down your throat. Whether you like it or not, you can't do anything about it. Jason just got home from work like an hour ago. I've been loopy from my medication for the last 3 days, been running a low-grade headache, but we're still here. We're still kicking. Somebody's still listening. I don't know who, but we love you. We thank you, and we have our picks ready to go. Did you happen to catch any of that NFL game last night?
Oh, what a terrible game. I mean, I had the Redskins, obviously, so that made it even worse. But the Redskins' offense in the first half just was living inside their own 10-yard line. And they just could not get out of the shadow of their own goalpost for almost that entire first half. Kind of hard to win a football game that way.
Yeah, not easy.
And then their defense just didn't really, really do a whole lot. And they had a chance to kind of make it tough for the Giants, and then they gave up that touchdown, I think it was to Randall, really late, right before they ran the kickoff back. And the Redskins, when they needed a couple of stops, just enough, I was hoping to even just for the push, but the Redskins just could not get the Giants off the field. So you're playing from inside your own 20-yard line for most of the first half, and in the second half, defense can't get off the field. That's not a recipe for success.
No, it's not. It's also not a recipe when you have the DBs that the Washington Redskins have. Those defensive backs were off.
Well, and D'Angelo
Hall Breland
went out injured.
Right.
So that doesn't – and he's not that great either.
Right. That's,
it's not like D'Angelo Hall is the answer, and that's your number one guy.
Yeah, when you're losing a 30-something-year-old cornerback and you're, like, grinding your teeth because, oh, God, if he goes down, what do we do? That's not a good sign. And Rashard Breland was pretty much the guy that took up most of the slack, and he just got toasted. First, Odell Beckham lit him up over the middle, then Reuben Randall got him on the sideline, and it was ugly. But this is what you get with NFC East football. If my point had not been proven before, for those of you that watched that game last night, this is the worst division for defending a pass in all of football, and it's not even close. The numbers say it. Your eye test says it. Everything says it. That game was terrible last night because when you needed a stop on third down, nobody could get a stop, the Giants or the Redskins, quite frankly, because nobody can defend the pass in that division. It's just awful. And Eli Manning got lucky because he was facing the worser of the two secondaries, which is why I picked the Giants. But it was ugly. It was. I'm sitting out there at the Liberty Bowl watching the Memphis Tigers game, And the lack of defense in that game, boy, I'm thinking the whole time, God, I wish I was home watching the NFL game because this is just so awful. Not realizing how bad the NFL game was. It was almost on the same level.
Yeah, it was hard to watch. I mean, just knowing that I had the Redskins, and you kept seeing this path to success for the Redskins because you just realized the Giants
and do that.
Yeah, just tighten this up and maybe hit some big gainers. And it seemed like every time the Redskins hit a big play, there was a hold or there was some silly penalty, and they never really got going. And you got to have some consistency when Kirk Cousins is your quarterback.
Oh,
it ended up being, I believe, was an 11-point game. It was at 32-21.
That's right.
But there was a way for the Redskins to compete in that game, and they didn't have it. They did not have it that night. Everybody on TV today, does this mean the Giants are back? Does this mean, the Giants, other than for their stupidity, should be 3-0. Let's not forget that. This should be a 3-0 Giants team that's now sitting at 1-2 and has a lot of work to do to get back to some respectability after two really, really rough losses, those first two games. And one of those was already a divisional loss, but that division is so wounded. You got the Cowboys wounded. The Eagles just don't look right. It's just toss that all up in the air, and we have no clue who's coming out of this thing.
No,
not even like it's not even like we don't have a clue. We don't have like even an inkling. You know, we don't even have like a glimmer of any hope for any of these four teams. All we know is that somebody's got to win this mess.
And we know whoever comes out is going to have a terrible defense.
Odds are very, very good that we will not get a wild card out of that division. I don't think.
I'll put money on that. Our guest number, as always, is area code 646-595-4534. Email the show in much less detail at gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at IMLDDre. Follow Jason at IMLDJTG. Our picks will be up on the blog after the show is over. The website for that is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. You'll get this live show and the after show as well. So week 3 on the horizon coming up in a couple of days, and we'll start our highlights looking at back to the NFC East. We did a little moratorium for our highlight game last week, took a little break from the NFC East because it was getting so much media attention, but the big news of the NFC East would be the 2-0 Dallas Cowboys, and how will they keep it going, and how can they possibly keep it up, dropping a franchise player with every win they get, sort of like a deal with the devil that they seem to be making. The only 2-0 matchup in week 3 are these two teams, and you could have made $1 billion if you put money on this in Vegas, the 2-0 Atlanta Falcons and the 2-0 Dallas Cowboys. The Falcons are a 1-point road favorite at Big D, obviously because Big D will be starting Big B, Brandon Whedon, at quarterback in place of the injured Tony Romo, and will also not have their stud wide receiver, Dez Bryant. So with that as the background, Jason, what's your pick?
Well, if I am anything, I may not be a student of the numbers, but I am a student of history. And that is why I am going to take the Dallas Cowboys in this game. I'm actually going to, obviously, take that point. Thank you. Or something. But I seem to remember a very similar situation many years ago, the Atlanta Falcons team having to play against Chris Winkie.
Oh.
And, yeah, that Chris Winkie and the Carolina Panthers and losing to one of the absolute worst starting quarterbacks that I've ever seen. And I've got a feeling, I want to see something from the Atlanta team before I believe, because this would be the ripe for the picking. They should go in there, use that up-tempo defense, get aggressive with Brandon Whedon, get some pressure on the quarterback, force him into some mistakes. But that Dallas offensive line is just so good. I think they're actually going to keep Whedon clean. and they'll be able to do enough against a possibly over-aggressive Atlanta defensive unit. They might be trying a little bit too hard, feeling a little bit too confident at that 2-0, that they'll be able to slow the game down, ball control, keep away from that high-octane Atlanta offense. And I actually think that the Cowboys gut out a close win here. So I'm actually going to go with the Cowboys. Probably not the popular pick.
Well, Atlanta is the favorite, so the money has obviously been flowing towards the Falcons' side there. I see the game playing out somewhat similarly. I do think Atlanta will be aggressive defensively, trying to force Brandon Weeden into some mistakes, knowing that the playmaking ability of the Cowboys has been greatly stunted because of their injuries. And I also believe that Dallas will have a running advantage. Atlanta will be without their, in my opinion, their best running back, Tevin Coleman, who's got a rib injury. And because of the missing Tony Romo and Dez Bryant, I think Dallas will rely on their offensive line and rely on ball control and try to play keep away. And so I do see some yardage on the ground for Joseph Randall and Lance Dunbar and Darren McFadden. And I think the difference is going to be what the difference has been for the Atlanta Falcons the last 2 weeks. Because as I look at the schedule, one glaring thing blinks out at me, and you can probably guess what it is. Oh, my God. Is that another NFC East secondary for the Atlanta Falcons? What the fuck?
It is.
Oh, my God. It's
Redskins next week? If they just play the Redskins next week, they could just boom, you know. They could get the whole thing here all in one shot.
Oh, my God. And that's why I have to take the Falcons, because I think that'll be all the difference. Whether Dallas takes a lead with that ball control offense or not, at the end of the game, if Matt Ryan has to go deep to Julio Jones and make big plays, by God, Matt Ryan will go deep to Julio Jones and make big plays, because who the fuck's going to stop him on the Cowboys exactly? Who's going to stop that? Nobody stopped him.
This definitely doesn't look like the Mike Smith stubborn, I'm just going to run the ball right into the line of scrimmage every time I need a first down type Atlanta offense. So I'll give you that. They do not look afraid to air this thing out. Last week they discovered Leonard Hankerson. I mean, now Matt Ryan's kind of pulling the old Aaron Rodgers, and he's just resurrecting dudes, you know. It's like you throw warm bodies out there, and I will distribute the ball to these guys. So I love that offense. I just got that weird feeling. This just feels like a spot for them to go and I don't know if it's overconfidence or what it is, but I have a feeling that defense will give up the critical play.
I'll say this. I believe this is what sets our show apart from any other show that you're going to listen to trying to get football picks for this weekend. We've been doing this so long that without any research, I promise that you didn't look that up, the Chris Winkie thing. You just remember.
I just remember.
Ago.
Yes.
That Atlanta had a shot to go in and beat a depleted Cowboys team and found a way to lose because of some crazy...
At the time, it was a Carolina Panthers squad.
Okay.
And Chris Winkie came in, and I believe threw 7 passes for the entire game.
Okay, yeah, I remember that game.
And
yeah.
The Panthers just ran wildcat for the whole game. That's how little faith that they had in Winkie. And Atlanta somehow found a way to lose to that.
Yeah.
Granted, not the same team. But, you know, there's karma and mojo or whatever you want to call it, stars aligning. You know, you develop, especially when you're a fan of a team, you develop certain instincts for your own team. You think you know your team. And I know them. I think they're going to go out there and I think they're going to lose. I think there'll be a game effort. I don't think anybody will be down on them for losing the game. I do think that Brandon Weeden may have a quick hook. We don't know. Maybe we'll see Matt Cassel if things don't go according to plan very quickly. Not that that's a big deal, but I think there'll be enough to keep them clean. That offensive line does maul people.
Well, I promise you, there's no other show that you're going to listen to this weekend that's going to bring up the Chris Winkie effect as a reason for possibly picking the Cowboys to go 3-0. So you're definitely unique on that end. Our second highlight game, we'll see the Steelers and the Rams go head-to-head. One of those inter-conference matchups. Steelers, of course, starting off with that loss to New England, bouncing back with the win over San Fran. So the 1-1 Pittsburgh Steelers, the offense is humming. Everyone's got all sorts of compliments and huzzas for Todd Haley and the Steelers. Oh, the question, of course, is that young defense, will they keep their momentum going? They go to the Rams, coming off of the strange combination of knocking off the two-time defending NFC champion Seahawks and then going to Washington and losing to that ragtag squad.
I had
so
that one.
You sure did. So the 1-1 Steelers, the 1-1 Rams, I suppose off of the momentum of still of that season-opening win at home over Seattle, St. Louis is back at home and find themselves favored over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now it's a one-point spread, so take that with a grain of salt. But nonetheless, I have to admit I was surprised to see that the Steelers were underdogs at all to St. Louis for any reason. The thought of Ben Roethlisberger as an underdog to Nick Foles, I got to go with the Steelers in this one. This seems to be easy, but there's been so many games throughout the years, of course, that seemed easy to me that wound up going the other way. But I will ride with the Steelers here in this one. The O is clicking. Of course, the big question is going to be, can the St. Louis defensive line disrupt Ben Roethlisberger and make him make some mistakes and turn the ball over? And I think to do that to Russell Wilson is one thing because he's 5'11 and not all that hardcore. He's a great athlete, don't get me wrong, but he's not Ben Roethlisberger. He's not some big strapping stud from the Midwest that, you know, 6'5 and walks around and does what he wants to do, especially with other college girls in different dorms and bars, but we won't get into all that.
Allegedly.
So I think this is
sound like
one of
our callers from last season.
I do. I got an infected for a second there. So I think the big key of the game being the St. Louis D smashing down on Roethlisberger is not going to work because Roethlisberger doesn't really get affected that much by teams smashing down on him. He seems to brush those hits off and keeps him moving. On the injury front, Le'Veon Bell, who wasn't injured but suspended, will be returning from his two-game suspension. On the other side of the ball, the best all-around athlete on the Pittsburgh defense, in my opinion, Ryan Shazier, will be out. He's got a shoulder injury, so that worries me. And St. Louis might be able to push the ball up the field on the ground. Todd Gurley might actually make his debut in the backfield for the Rams. So I can see this being possibly an even matchup on the ground and the difference being in the air. And the way Todd Haley's offense is humming right now under Big Ben, that edge definitely goes to the Steelers. So in this close matchup, I still feel pretty good taking Pittsburgh.
I concur. I've absolutely got Pittsburgh here. That's just too much offense, even for that scary defensive line of the Rams to overcome. You nailed it. I mean, this is Nick Foles and Ben Roethlisberger trying to guide offenses up and down the field. Who do you trust? I mean, yeah, Nick Foles did some nice things in Philadelphia. I mean, he had that, was a couple of years ago, where it was like 27 touchdowns and 2 picks or some ridiculous number that he had in Philadelphia, and that got him a ticket out of town. So that just tells you what they thought of Nick Foles. Obviously, Chip Kelly knows better. It was the system, not the player, I guess.
Genius.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think that the Rams have enough offensive weaponry to overcome the onslaught, especially in the dome, on the fast track. I don't think it matters that Pittsburgh's on the road here. Getting Bell back is nice. They can kind of ease him in because apparently D'Angelo Williams discovered the fountain of youth.
No kidding.
So you don't even have to worry about leaning on Le'Veon Bell all that hard in his first game back. You can ease him back into the role because now you've got a running back who last week just absolutely just torched. Was it the 49ers last week? Was the unfortunate recipient of the one of his career games, and who knew? I mean, they're just expecting a placeholder running back for a couple of weeks, and he played 2 really good games. So that's a good problem to have if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that offense is loaded. They've got their stud running back back. Roethlisberger's going to be out there airing it out. That D-line, they may get to him. But getting to Roethlisberger doesn't necessarily mean that you force him into mistakes. You've got to be careful about that because you can get to him and he somehow still finds a way to muscle his way out of that because he's just such a big guy and he muscles his way out of that and all of a sudden finds somebody streaking across the field for just huge gainers. So if you're going to get him, you got to get him down on the ground or you have to do the old point of attack thing like we saw the Steelers, not to the Seahawks, due to the Broncos against Peyton Manning was don't attack the body, attack the arm. You know, start swiping at the arm to make him uncomfortable, which was a great move in that Super Bowl because it really forced Manning into some bad throws. Well, you almost have to kind of do that kind of thing to a big quarterback who's not easy to bring down. You've got to maybe necessarily not target sacking him. You've got to maybe target getting at that arm, trying to force a fumble, trying to hit him on the backswing like the Packers did against him in the Super Bowl, and that turned into a pick six. So I'm giving a history lesson tonight.
Yeah, you're all over it.
And I'm going to go with the Steelers here. I'm going to concur with you. I think that this is just too much offense for the Rams to overcome.
Interesting point, because I'm sure when Aaron Donald gets around the corner and gets to Ben, the way he's been playing so far this year, he's going to look to square up Ben and try to unload and make a statement. And that might not be the smart thing to do, young man. You might go bouncing
Ben
off.
Ben might just shrug him off. Yeah.
Yeah. You might realize
Ben could
that
just
Big Ben
dump
his
shoulder, and all of a sudden that dude's flying right over him, and Ben pops up out of that mess and throws a bomb down the field.
Might be a lot stronger than you think he is. And on a side note, D'Angelo Williams, they did this thing at the Tigers game last night, the Memphis Tigers, where they
he was a Tiger, wasn't he?
Yeah, during one of the timeouts, they just did a little roll call. I don't know if they do that every home game on the video board of all the former Tigers set to some maudlin music in the background. And by far, the loudest cheer and the biggest pop was for D'Angelo Williams. So they still love him down in Memphis. They still remember him, and he's making them proud. He's had a nice little career. So
yeah,
moving
a career that we mostly thought was over.
Yeah, but he apparently had a great off season. Like he really got himself in shape for someone his age, and it really shows through two games. So good on him. Yeah. Our third highlight game for week three to the AFC East, the two challengers to the throne, or maybe there's three of them, because all three teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Miami Dolphins, the New York Jets, I think they have a little bit of glimmer of hope against the New England Patriots. They're all sort of feeling like, hey, we've got something going. We have some momentum. Of course, Buffalo got it snuffed out last week. But Miami looking to have a big season, at least before the season began. They've kind of stumbled out of the gate a little bit. And, of course, the Jets looking so hot through the first two games. But two of those teams, the Bills and the Dolphins, will meet up in Miami. Buffalo, like I said, went to stayed home, rather. They had New England come in. They thought they had all the answers after beating Indy in week one, and New England said, no, you really don't. Not yet, anyway. And, of course, Miami sort of still trying to find their way. You know, they'd start off with the opener over Washington, and you think they've got it in the bag and got momentum going. Then they find themselves losing to Jacksonville last week, which I'm still not sure how they let that happen. So it's the 1-1 Bills and it's the 1-1 Dolphins down on South Beach. Buffalo, the 2.5-point underdog at Miami. Jason, who you got?
I'm going to stick with the plan here, and I'm going to go with the Dolphins. Neither one of these teams in week one beat at this point, what we would consider to be top-flight teams. I mean, the Colts have been exposed 2 weeks in a row now, so that's who the Bills got in week one. And the Redskins are the Redskins, right? I mean, we've seen this now. I mean, yeah, they snuck that win out over the Rams. But that was more of a letdown game, I think, for the Rams, just thinking, yeah, we bad. You know, we beat the defending champs, you know. So that happens a lot. You get these letdown games. But Miami, I think, is still in a better spot than Buffalo is. I think Miami is a growing team. They have a good defensive front. I want to see these guys get after Tyrod Taylor. Let's see what Sue and Wake can go do, if they can start wrecking a little damage against the, I hate to say rookie, but this guy's only making his third start. Let's see if they can get a little pressure against this Buffalo squad now on the road. Buffalo's first venture out of Buffalo this year. You know, so interesting to see what happens when they go down to Miami. I trust the Dolphins more because I trust their plan more. They definitely feel like they're building towards something, where I think the Bills are still kind of finding their way. So it's just more of a feel for me in this game. It's not a stat-driven thing. It's just, you know, where we see these teams on their arc progressing through the season. And I definitely still see Miami as a team on the upswing, because that was a bad loss last week. You know, Buffalo, they lost to New England. There's no shame in that. Miami, though, going to Jacksonville and losing, I think they're coming home, and they're going to take a little aggression, frustration out on Buffalo in this game. I'm looking for Miami to win and cover.
Miami going there making Allen Robinson look like an all-pro wide receiver. That's not something I'm sure they were planning on doing at all.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to concur with you for pretty much the same reason. I'm looking at Kevin Coyle. I'm looking at you, Kevin, the defensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins. It's time for Miami's D to show up here in their home game, here in Tyrod Taylor's first road start, as you already mentioned. And I'm looking for them to draw something up and put him in his place, kind of like what New England basically did for most of the game last week in Buffalo. It's time for the Dolphins to come through and show up as a full team. I think this is the spot to do it. I still like Ryan Tannehill's progression. I still think that he's on the right path. I think Miami is still, as a team, have a bright future. And I know Rex Ryan has this sort of weird mojo and this weird thing going on from the Jets, that he just kind of has this magic pixie dust and he's able to do things with teams that a lot of people don't think that you should be able to do. And he had the mojo working in week one against Andrew Luck and the Colts, as you said. That now has to look like a bit of a tainted victory, because the Colts are not the Colts right now. Andrew Luck is not Andrew Luck. So maybe that wasn't all Rex Ryan. Maybe there is some adjustments being made by the Colts, and maybe there's still some things that the Bills need to do to be where they want to be. So with that said, I think this is a little tough for them to go down into Miami and pull out a big road win. Tyrod Taylor, frankly, has shown me a lot more in his first two starts than I thought he had. He showed me some quarterback skills, and he's, of course, shown me some nice speed. But like I said, I think this is the time for Miami to put a game plan together to shut that down, because, honestly, when you look at the Bills' offensive weapons outside of LeSean McCoy, they shouldn't have enough to come into your house and beat you if you're a real quality outfit. And I think the Dolphins are a quality outfit. So we'll see if they prove us right. No Marquise Goodwin in the receiving corps for Buffalo, and they're also missing safety Aaron Williams. I think those might be two big items to miss for the Bills. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it's going to be grinded out, and I expect the Dolphins to grind it out and get the win, pretty much because they are actually the better team when all is said and done.
All right. That was an easy one for us.
Yeah, you know what that means.
The Buffalo squish.
Mm-hmm. Leaving us time for our fourth highlight game to get into, Sunday Night Football. Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos, coming off a surprising victory over the Kansas City Chiefs on Thursday night, now go to Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions, who have all sorts of things going on in their house. That is a bit of a mess right now. Stafford has injuries. You can read about him being so beat up that it looked like he was going to pull a Drew Brees and possibly miss this game, but he pulled himself together in practice this week and he's ready to go, or at least he claims he is. So actually two sort of physically beat up quarterbacks, because we talk about how Peyton Manning does not look like Peyton Manning. And they're both going to try to to get a big win here on Sunday Night Football in front of a primetime audience. But I expected this to be a better matchup because Detroit, I did not expect them to start 0-2. The defense has not looked anything like what I thought they were going to look like. Missed my golf button there.
You're right there.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there.
We're not losing you mid-show here, are we? Just let me know if I got to take over.
I certainly hope not.
You just have to hit the buttons, though. I don't have a board.
I hit the cough button and got a couple of coughs off the air, and then I put it back on and had another cough that I didn't expect.
Oh, yeah, something snuck. You got one that snuck in there on you.
Yeah, I hate that.
All right.
So the Broncos, who are 2-0, despite Peyton Manning not looking like himself, go in now as a 3-point road favorite at Detroit. And I understand the line because of how bad the Lions have looked and because Denver is improbably 2-0. Maybe there's some magic working there, but I'm going to go with the Lions. I think that they really need this win. I think there's got to be an air of desperation. There's the home crowd. There's the Sunday night aspect. I don't think they want to get embarrassed in front of their home crowd in the primetime spot. And I think Matthew Stafford really needs to come through with a big performance here to show that he's not completely falling apart. The Broncos' running game is not there to balance their offense out yet. C.J. Anderson has been a disappointment so far this season. Ronnie Hillman isn't much better. So I wonder how many times the Broncos can come through running an offense that really isn't balanced. And I also have to go back to Gary Kubiak, the coach of the Broncos, who from what I saw in that Thursday night game against the Chiefs, looked like he was having Peyton Manning run his offense, Gary Kubiak's offense, and try to get under center and do a lot of things that Peyton Manning isn't used to doing. And only after Peyton got to him in the second half and said, let me go shotgun, let me do what I'm comfortable doing, and then Peyton Manning played a hell of a lot better and led the Broncos to the victory. Gary Kubiak earlier this week already made a statement, and this might be gamesmanship. He might not have meant this. He may be trying to throw somebody off the scent. But Gary Kubiak said the only way for his offense to work is to stay committed to his offense. And he made it seem like they're going right back to the Gary Kubiak stuff. And Peyton Manning's just going to have to work at it and get better at it. And immediately when I heard that is when I decided I'm picking the Lions. All that other stuff does factor in that is an air of desperation in Detroit. It's an 0-2 start. They certainly don't want to go 0-3. They think they're better than this. But if you're going to sit there and tell me that you're going to insist that Hall of Famer Peyton Manning has to conform to you and run your offense and make your stuff look good, I'm going to go against you because you clearly did not learn the lesson that you should have learned in that Kansas City Chiefs win. You let the man do what he's best at doing, and you don't sit there and try to force feed this crap down his throat. And so I think they're going to do the same thing. They're going to come out flat. Peyton Manning's going to look old. Everyone's going to say, wow, what's going on? You know, the Lions defense really stepping up and making Peyton Manning look bad when it's really he's running stuff that he's no good running. And again, if they come out shotgun and Peyton's doing his thing, then I got duped. You know, I fell for the Gary Kubiak speech and a lot of other people will have fallen for it too. But if they're really going to go in there running the Kubiak stuff, I think Detroit's going to get a leg up and get an early lead, and we'll see if they hold on, but I'm going to go with the Lions here.
Yeah, I'm not feeling good about the fact that the only game we disagree on so far is me taking Brandon Whedon. I concur. I have the Lions. I mean, for a little different reasons than you do. I have the Lions because Denver, to me, I've just not been impressed by them. I don't think that they've looked very good in either of their starts. We both saw that last game a little differently, although you kind of came around to my way a little bit after some discussion where I put that last victory more on Denver's defense than I did on Peyton Manning. They allowed Peyton Manning to get back into that game rather than Peyton Manning doing the old way and willing a team back into the game. He needs that defense. This is a tough spot on the road. If Matthew Stafford and that offense are clicking at all, I don't think this is going to be an easy spot on the road in Detroit. Not the easiest place to play. Not the greatest home field advantage in the world for Detroit. But this is a team that's 0-2. 0-2 is always desperation time, especially if you're a team that's got playoff aspirations. You were supposed to be so much better than you were, especially how their season was last year and how their season ended last year. 0-3 isn't going to get it done. So I think that Detroit comes out with a little fire in the belly and beats a team that I really don't think is all that good. I'm not all that impressed so far by the Denver Broncos, other than their defense, which I have been immensely impressed by. I don't think their offense is all that good. And that all goes right back to Peyton Manning. But their running game has been just terrible. They've been actually talking about more Ronnie Hillman and less C.J. Anderson. That's not a good sign if you're C.J. Anderson, that you're looking at getting supplanted by Ronnie Hillman.
No, it's not.
Are they going to bring Monty Ball back? I mean, what are we going to have now? I mean, so that's got to get better. This is not traditionally a team that's very easy to run against, so I think that problems will continue, which again means it's all going to be on Peyton Manning, and I think it's good enough here for the Lions as a home dog, go figure, to sneak this one out and just win it outright. I think that the Lions get this win and try to get back to some respectability in that division.
Yep, 7-1 at home last year, so if there's ever a time to get it together, this team needs to do it right here.
Now, although I had them as a third-place team, I believe.
But
we'll see.
But you also have no respect for Denver 2 years running, so we know that as well.
I don't. Actually, going back at what I was picking, yeah, I have the Detroit Lions as a third-place team, and actually I have the Broncos out of the playoffs too, so I'm not big believers in either one of these teams.
Right.
But I'm going to go with I actually have Denver in third place in their division too, so a little of third place predicted third place teams for me here.
A little weirdness going on with the DeAndre Levy injury as well, the best tackler for the Lions, that now they're saying he might need surgery on that hip, so that really worries me. That's a big part of me picking Detroit to be as good as I think they're going to be this year, is having that guy in the middle of their defense.
So your Super Bowl team.
It is. My NFC Super Bowl team, they can't start 0-3, can they? Oh, boy. On to the rest of Week 3 in even more less detail. We will start with the Colts and the Titans. The Indianapolis Colts at 0-2. This is what people think of Andrew Luck and the 0-2 Indianapolis Colts. They think they're still in the AFC South, so we're going to still make them favorites in these division games. They are 3-point road favorites at the 1-1 Tennessee Titans with their rookie quarterback Bruno Mars Ciota. Because Marcus Mariota looks like Bruno Mars.
Oh, I like that there. That was good. I didn't know where you were quite going there. But I agree. I absolutely agree with the bookmakers and the assessment that the Colts season doesn't really start until they start playing the cream puffs on their schedule, and those are usually their cohorts in the AFC South. So, yes, Colts get right this week. For 1 week, we don't have to listen to talk that Andrew Luck's the shittiest quarterback in the league.
Yeah, I'm going to concur. This is what the Colts do. They get those teams in their division and beat them down. I should know. I'm living in the state with one of those teams, so I'm quite used to Andrew Luck beating the hell out of the Titans the last couple of years. Now is the time for the Colts defense to get together and gel, as well as the offense, actually more so the offense. Because you're playing the Titans defense is what I meant to say. We know what Andrew Luck has been doing out there, that Andre Johnson's been missing, T.Y. Hilton is hurt and hobbling around, Dante Moncrief has been balling, but how long is that going to last when Philip Dorsett has been missing in action? This is the defense to get it together against and figure all that stuff out. This is the time to do it. You brought up last week about the Colts defensive backfield being so beat up. They're still beat up. They still won't have Greg Toler or Darius Butler. but you're playing the Titans and Marcus Mariota. As long as you're not playing the Lovey 2, you should be okay. So I will concur with you and take the Colts and give the 3 points.
Yeah. And there's no, and after watching 2 weeks of ball now, there's no shame in the Colts losing to the Bills and the Jets defenses, because those defenses are tight.
And the Titans are not. The Oakland Raiders at 1-1, the Cleveland Browns at 1-1. Maybe surprising wins for both of them, but a bit of an even matchup. And the Raiders, coming off a big win last week over Baltimore, are a road dog 3.5 A 3.5-point underdog at the returning Jake McCown and the Cleveland Browns.
Ah, you just said it. Luke McCown starting this week for the
Luke's down south. This is Jake.
Luke McCown. Jake McNown?
You're confusing your McNowns, yes.
Cade McCown?
Josh McCown, I think is his name.
You said it. I'll take the Raiders straight up.
I concur. What the fuck does Mike Pettine see in this? It's Josh McCown, dude. What are you doing?
I'll tell you what he sees. He hates the shit out of Johnny Manziel. That's what he sees.
And I hate to feel like I'm in a position to have to defend Johnny Football, but throw
don't
him
do
out
it.
There
don't
one
do it.
More
Just stop.
Time.
Stop.
The alternative is Jake McCown.
Noonan.
As we said before the season started, worst quarterback situation in all of football. So it ultimately doesn't matter. So, but yes, we'll both take the Raiders. Cincinnati and Baltimore, always fun when these two get together in the AFC North. The 2-0 Bengals and the desperate 0-2 Ravens. And people think they're so desperate that they'll overcome their record because they are a 2.5-point home favorite over the 2-0 Cincinnati Bengals.
I'll take those points, thank you. I'll actually take the Bengals here. They're just right now, and I had some more hopes. I didn't think that Baltimore was going to be this shitty. Well, they're shitty. I'm going to take the Bengals here. That's just a much better squad. They can run, they can throw, they can do it all until January. So for now, give me the Bengals here on the road.
Yep, I'm going to concur. And I don't feel great about it, but Joe Flacco getting on track in his first home game, that's a nice narrative, but I don't see the evidence that that's going to actually happen. He just doesn't seem to be on the same page with his receivers. We talked about this before the season began, too. Steve Smith and some guys, and right now those guys aren't doing it. So until they find a way to sew that up, yeah, I'm going to go with the Bengals, who are definitely playing much better football at the moment. And the Baltimore defense isn't finding their way either, and so this is a bad time to play a good offense. Baltimore 6-2 at home last year, but Cincinnati 5-3 on the road. So I think Cincinnati's actually got a good chance here, and Baltimore just not playing well, so I think Cincinnati will get it done. And I hate saying that just because the Bengals at 3-0 would make them seem pretty damn legit, wouldn't it? I don't think the Bengals are legit, but I think the Ravens are definitely not legit.
The Bengals are more legit than the Ravens.
Yeah, so yeah, I got to go with you and take the Bengals there. Huge monster spread of the week, part one, the early afternoon version of it. It's the 1-1 Jacksonville Jaguars, who are 13.5-point underdogs at the 2-0 world champion New England Patriots.
Yeah, we have a saying here at In Much Less Detail. It's not enough.
It's not enough.
Yeah, no, this is normally the cream puff spot where you worry about the letdown, but not the Patriots on the revenge tour that you keep talking about. And Belichick is not one of these guys who's going to take it easy on somebody. We saw that last week against Buffalo where they're up by 3 touchdowns and they're still trying to chuck the ball deep to run that score up. Thing is, this is in Buffalo's defense. They might put 50 up this week. I'll take New England squish.
50? Woo! Nope, I concur. Junior varsity versus regular varsity, it's never good. It's always ugly. New Orleans and Carolina, speaking of ugly, this is what you were talking about. Luke McCown will now take over for the New Orleans Saints because Drew Brees cannot answer the bell. He will miss this start at quarterback. If you missed the news, Luke McCown as the starting quarterback for the Saints going into Charlotte. And because of that, it is an 8-point spread. Saints are plus 8 at Carolina.
I'm taking them all, and I'm springing the upset here. I am taking the Saints on the road to win this game. Drew Brees hasn't been right the first couple weeks. He's injured. You get somebody not injured with an NFL-caliber arm under center. Carolina's unimpressive. I like the Saints to spring the upset.
Ah, you've said the key words in there, the magic words. NFL-caliber arm.
Yeah.
This is Luke McCown. I'm taking the Panthers, and I'm giving the 8 points. There's still not an NFL-caliber arm under center for the Saints, even though they've switched out the hurt guy for Luke McCown. It's Luke McCown, for God's sake.
It's the NFC South, too.
It's the NFC South. But it's the Saints. The Saints are a complete mess right now. Brandon Cooks has an ankle injury. I don't know who they're throwing to if he's not right. They're still beat up on defense. Brees out with that rotator cuff. I don't think they're really in shape to overcome losing Drew Brees right now. Even if they had Drew Brees, they were struggling before he got hurt. Their offense hasn't gelled yet either at all. So,
just
I gotta go with Carolina Gotta go with Carolina and Cam Newton here, even though Luke Kuechly will not be playing once again as well.
It's only the second game we disagree on.
Well, there's a lot of games left.
Okay.
The Eagles and the Jets, the 0-2 Eagles, which surprises a lot of people, and the 2-0 Jets would surprise probably even more.
That's
Philly
right.
is only a 2-point underdog at the New York Jets.
I don't think this is the defense after watching that game that the Jets played in the last game. I'll say with the Eagles rolling in, if you're a team and you're not quite sure of what you've got on offense, Todd Bowles is doing something good there in New York. I mean, he's got that defense turning people over, fired up. That's an extremely impressive group, whereas the Eagles have not been able to move the ball effectively against either the Falcons or the Cowboys. Yeah, give me the Jets.
I concur. That's about as good a breakdown as I could give right there. This is not the Cowboys or the other team that they played. This is the New York Jets, and on the other side, Philadelphia will not have Kiko Alonso or Michael Kendrick. They're not stopping anybody as it is. So this might be a blowout. This might be the Jets all day up and down the field, and we know what happens.
What?
When Philly gets the ball, 3 and out in 7 seconds. So
get
right back on the field, guys. Yep. Here we go.
Yeah. I actually, in the work fantasy league I'm in, I actually picked up the Jets defense just for this week.
That's a very good pickup, I think. Chris Ivory doesn't look good for this game for the Jets. He's got a quad and a groin injury, so you might want to go get Bilal Powell off the waiver wire as well.
Actually ran pretty good against the Colts. But everyone runs good against the Colts.
more battering of Sam Bradford. That might get ugly quick there.
Yeah, we may see some Mark Sanchez against the Jets. How perfect would that be?
Oh.
But
the only thing more perfect is if Rick Ryan was still
there. When he comes into the game. They'd probably cheer him for coming into the game.
Yes, Sanchez is in. All right.
That's right. Now we get to watch you fuck your own team the way you fucked ours for all those years.
Jameis Winston, the other rookie quarterback, and the now 1-1 Tampa Bay Buccaneers off the big win in New Orleans. 6.5-point underdogs at Ryan Mallett and the 0-2 Houston Texans.
Yeah, I baffling line of the week. Houston -6.5. I'll take Tampa. I think they're going to go in there and win the game.
Wasn't the Buccaneers' protection of Jameis an issue before the season? And now you're going to go against J.J. Watts.
It's one guy.
Yes, that's one hell of a guy, though.
Well, yeah.
That one guy seems like can't be stopped by anybody. I'm going to give the 6.5 and take the Texans here. I know that's a lot of points.
J.J. Watt has been very quiet so far this year.
The first game he wasn't too quiet. Last game he was a little quieter. But the first game he may have been quiet just because people weren't talking about him, but he was there. He made some impact plays. But I think he's actually so damn good now that his damn good games are seen as quiet because he didn't, you know, get a fumble return for a touchdown or something like that, or catch a touchdown. When he doesn't do that, it's considered quiet. But yeah, he's pretty awesome. I think Jameis Winston is going to be in for a day and a half trying to get away from that guy. The San Diego Chargers and the Minnesota Vikings are two interesting 1-1 teams. Chargers are a 2.5-point underdog going to Minnesota, who apparently have the real Adrian Peterson back now.
A couple of playoff teams here, but I'm going to go ahead and give the point to the Vikings that I saw last week. They're at home. San Diego, we love those East Coast teams traveling. And Minnesota's not a fun place to go and play. I don't like the Chargers in this spot. I like the Chargers overall, but I don't like them in this spot. I think what we saw them last week is more representative of what we're going to see from them all season versus what we saw in that shitty Monday night doubleheader late game. So I'll go ahead and give the points, take the Vikings.
Yeah, I'm going to concur with you. I don't feel great about it, but it's another tight road game for San Diego. We saw what happened last week against Cincinnati where they were just able to find a way to back themselves out and lose that game. And I'm going to take them to find a way to back out and lose this one as well. We know the Vikings are going to run better than the Chargers because the Chargers can't run, and we know the Chargers are going to pass better than the Vikings because Rivers over Bridgewater is an easy choice. So basically just comes down to the intangibles and who's going to make their own breaks at the end. And I guess I got more confidence in Minnesota making a break than with San Diego. Harrison Smith is going to be waiting to pop somebody over the middle, and I think that's going to cause more resistance than anything the Bengals did last week. So I think the Chargers got a tougher defensive matchup against them, and I think the Vikings will pull it out. In the NFC West, it is the 1-1 San Francisco 49ers. The big upset on Monday night to open the season over Minnesota that we talked about, followed by the turd that they laid up in Pittsburgh. Niners are a 6.5-point road dog at the 2-0 Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I'll give all the points. I'll take the Cardinals here. I think Cardinals are just going to keep rolling. I think that is the story that nobody talks about is just how good that team is, how good that team is with Carson Palmer. Who knew? They just don't lose when Carson Palmer starting quarterback for them, and as long as he stays upright, they're just going to roll up the Niners probably the way they rolled up the Bears. That is a complete team, offense, defense, special teams, underrated Arizona Cardinals. Rip the Niners.
No one can roll up another team the way Arizona rolled up the Chicago Bears last week. The Niners have to give better resistance than that, don't they? Good God.
Do they? Wait a minute. What about what the Steelers did to the Niners? That's some roll-upage that we had going on last week.
Well, that's the Steelers. I guess I don't believe in Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and John Brown. And yeah, that's
team is the fountain of youth.
I'm going to take the points. I don't know. I don't think I got San Fran to win, but I think I'll take the points. Should be more Johnson & Johnson in the backfield for Arizona, Chris and David, the rookie. This is another one. We know exactly what's going to happen statistically. We know San Fran's going to outrun Arizona because the Cardinals can't run the football. And we know Arizona's going to outthrow San Francisco because Palmer over Kaepernick is an easy choice. So the intangibles probably go to Arizona to win the game, but I think San Fran will give them a little bit of a fight. I think there's one of those division rivalry type deals where the Niners will dig down and compete in that game and stay within 6.5. Humongous big ass point spread of the week part two in the late afternoon. It will be those aforementioned Chicago Bears at 0-2 with Jay Cutler on the sideline and Jimmy Clausen. at the quarterback position. They are a 14.5 point underdog at the 0-2 Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, all you Cutler haters, you got what you wanted.
Here it
is. This is what you wanted, right? Here it is. I'm taking Seattle. I'm giving them all. This is my lock of the week. This might be my lock of the year. Cam Chancellor's back. This is an angry 0-2 Seattle team. They're, Jimmy Graham wants the ball. These guys are all angry. They are going to do some things, XXX stuff to the Bears this week. It's not going to be fun. There's going to be some banjo playing in the audience this week in the stands. Going to be ugly. And, who knew I would lock down the biggest spread of the week? But this feels like 40-3. I mean, this feels like 4 or 5 touchdowns easy. I'm no way I'm taking these points. No bear whispering here. Seattle squish.
I never saw Deliverance, but even I know what the banjo music means. Hey, boy, you sure got a purty mouth. I concur with the Seahawk raping of the Bears. I concur with the lock of the week, second week in a row that we both had the same lock. Come on, it's Jimmy Clausen against an angry Seattle Seahawks defense? Really? Really? This is
going to
be competitive?
Not let the kids hide the kids.
Oh, please. My uncle, the big Bears fan up in Chicago, hide your grandchildren's eyes. Don't let them see this carnage, because this is going to be ugly.
Yeah, remember what Mike from Football Fan Rush Radio said on the show about you got to wait? Yeah, and I told him he didn't have to wait that long for the Bears. I know it hurts, but this is really going to hurt if you're a Bears fan. But you know it's coming. You know it's coming. I mean, the Seahawks are going to be nice. They're going to bring out the Vaseline and everything.
Well, that's good. When you're getting anally probed, don't do it raw. That's just wrong. You know, at least ease it in a little bit.
Yeah.
Alshon Jeffrey's not even playing. So
who's
Clausen throwing to?
Oh, my God. I am so glad in our fantasy league, the one that you and I are in, that I have the Seahawks defense this week.
Oh, my goodness. That's just wrong. Even Cam Chancellor came back from his holdout. Even he wants some of Jimmy Clausen.
He came back just because they're playing the Bears this week. Who's starting for them?
Jimmy
Clausen? Oh, I'm coming back.
Oh, yeah, I'm back now. I'm back. What a spot to bounce back for a team that really needs the help in Seattle. Their first home game of the season, and here comes Jimmy Clausen and the Chicago Bears. Holy shit. And on Monday night, we will see the Kansas City Chiefs at 1-1. They are 7-point underdogs at the Superman-like Aaron Rodgers and the 2-0 Green Bay Packers.
I got to say, this is smelling pushy. But I'm still going to take the Packers here and give the 7. I do not like the Chiefs here going on the road, trying to bounce back from what that was that happened to them last week. They're up by 7 with a minute to go. And still somehow find a way to lose in regulation. I do not like this spot going to Lambeau where Aaron Rodgers just does not lose. It doesn't throw picks. He's just not the most generous guy to opposing defenses. It's just such a bad spot. Kansas City's got to be so mentally wiped still, even with the extra time to think about it. If this was a short week, maybe better, because then you can get it out of your mind. No, they've had to live with this for 10 days now, plus they're playing the last game of the week. I don't like this spot for Kansas City. Give me the Packers big.
Yeah, I got to admit, Lambeau at night is kind of a tough atmosphere, just as Seattle from last Sunday night. All that said, I'm going to take the points. That's a lot of points. Kansas City is a real quality team.
They are
we
a
always
quality
talk
team.
About it.
We do agree.
And I can't deny what Green Bay showed me on Sunday night against Seattle. That was an awesome performance. It was very special. I think maybe I'm going a little bit with this isn't Seattle. There's no revenge factor. There's no send a message to the top dog in the conference factor. So I guess I'm calling it for a little bit of a Green Bay letdown.
We just love people to beat the Seahawks and let down the next week.
Well, I'm going to take Kansas City with the points and call for a little bit of a letdown. Eddie Lacy has an ankle injury as well for Green Bay, so that might play a little bit of a
Devontae Adams is nicked up.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, KC, a quality group, and I'm gonna go with them to cover 7. More on our after show when we come back. I'll talk a little bit about that Tigers game last night. All right, into our VIP after show portion.
Oh, tight show tonight. We didn't even have to, like, hustle in the last minute to make our last pick.
No, I was looking at that. We were riffing on the Bears, Seahawks, and laughing at that for an extended period of time, and I was kind of doing it on purpose to fill a little time.
Don't worry about filibustering. We fill time.
We started making that pick. There's about 4 minutes left in the show. I was like, oh, wow, there's only one other game after this. We're actually making great time, so good
you
on
find
us.
You find us time. We'll fill it.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm going to fill it right now, counting up the games that were different this week.
It's not many, maybe 4 or 5. It's not like it has been.
Not counting last night.
Right.
Yeah.
You're already one up on me, so.
That's right.
So you're back to 3 games out.
Five games that were different this week, not counting last night. So.
Right, so 6 total. So I need to take 3 out of these to maintain my 4-game lead.
Basically. There's a little bit more incentive for me to win the games straight up this week than normal.
Uh-oh. Is there money involved?
I walk into my job this morning for the first time since last weekend. I hadn't been to work in 4 days because of the maladies that I've been going through. And completely out of the blue, out of nowhere, there's a table set up with sheets on the table to pick all of the NFL games that are taking place on Sunday. And the winner gets 4 days of 4 hours of personal time off.
Oh, okay. A little PTO.
Yeah. Company-sponsored gambling. I love it. That opens up all sorts of floodgates now. We're specifically sanctioning gambling on the workplace grounds. Then there's all sorts of opportunities now. If I can pick games and get time off, then what's next? You know, if I pick the NBA Finals, do I get a vacation week? You know, we can play with this a little bit. You know, maybe a baseball series over the weekend. I can, you know, get some hours in there. So this opens up all sorts of things. And it also kind of makes me a little worried because what are we doing? What the hell's going on here?
It just tells you how much the NFL means to everybody. And how much football is, it's like our lives are now, it's the big thing. It just keeps there. Fantasy, we make fun of the one-day fantasy leagues. We're doing that a little bit before the show even started. We were deciding on our highlight game, said, hey, maybe we'll get more listeners if we just want to stroke it talking about one-day, one-week fantasy. Who do I love in my one-week fantasy this week on my FanDuel or my DraftKings or whatever it is?
I think Colin Kaepernick could be a bargain at only $10 million or whatever the salary would be for him. I don't know.
Yeah. it's such a crapshoot with that stuff. It's hard enough to decide for an entire season what to do with a fantasy game, but now they've got everybody. It's like we're not even patient enough as a society to draft a team and stick with it for a season, but we just do a team every week.
Yeah, who needs that whole season shit? That's for old people.
Yeah, there's nothing like learning and growing and cutting guys. And the whole point of fantasy was to pretend like you were the GM of a team. Just doing this 1 week. No, we can't even stomach that anymore. We're so lazy. We just got to do it each week.
Instant gratification.
That's all it is.
Take a screenshot of your win for the week and post it on your wall. And I'm a champion because I won 1 week. Yeah! What?
Yeah. I put in $5 and won 20, but I only did that 1 week out of the year. So you do the math and tell me how much money I lost. What matters was that week you did win the 20.
Right, that's how they get you. You don't want to pay attention to all the reports that have come out that have said that, you know, 90% of the money won on these sites are won by like 2 or 3% of the guys that play it. You don't want to pay attention to that. If you pay attention to that, then you won't play at all. you know, if you actually listen to what they're trying to tell you, dummy, which is there are guys who specialize in this shit and they take all the money.
They are basically professionals at this.
Yes. They have studied the market inefficiencies and they know exactly who to play and who's undervalued. And, you know, it's not a crapshoot like if you played it and just looked down the list and said, I guess I'll take this $4 million guy who might play or might not. I don't know. I kind of like the team. You know, no, there's a science to it, as there is to much of these fantasy sports. And there's a way to do it, and there's a way to do it successfully. And if you're just kind of spitballing and picking out of your ass, chances are you're not going to be very successful.
You're going to lose. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it comes down to, is if you don't know what you're doing, you're generally going to lose.
Now, even if you know what you're doing, if you don't have formulas like these guys have to know exactly who to play at what salary, then you're going to lose to those guys. Now, I've played Daily Fantasy a little bit. It actually did it years ago. I haven't done it in a couple of years just because it's a little time consuming. And I, you know, if I didn't work Sundays, then maybe I would like to sit up there an hour before the game and study the inactives and, you know, try to figure out what the best team would be. But for somebody that's not actually there in front of the computer, you know, when it's go time, that's not really for me. But, you know, so it's fun. I didn't obsess over it like a lot of these guys do. I didn't play the big money, big money tournaments or whatever. But you know, it's kind of fun. But I do have that experience. I can say that it is correct that there's the winning teams, when you went through all the tournaments and you went through the small amount tournaments like I was in, the small money ones that cost $1 or $5 to enter. And then you looked at the teams that won that and looked at the teams that won the bigger tournaments. You kind of notice a running theme. Like, they always had the same guys on these teams that won. Like, how did they all know to pick up this guy on this game and at $4 million when I'm blowing my budget on, you know, the $20 million guys and getting and hoping to get, you know, a few points out of them? How did they do that? How did they always manage to, you know? So it kind of dawned on me a long time ago that there's some guys that know a hell of a lot more about this than me, and I'm pretty much out of my element, so I should just back off.
Yeah, that's just not for me. I'm more of the week-to-week type player for fantasy sports.
You actually like having an actual team of, you know, guys that are actually there every week instead of having to hunt and pick for the best guy every week.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, you know, I'm down with that. But we're old. You know, that's what we were raised on, so to speak. So it's understandable that that's what we would prefer. But the youngins, they got a whole other way of living out there. They really love this daily stuff. So yeah, more power to them, is what I say. So, of course, last night, as I've said, I was at the Memphis Tigers college game. Kudos to anybody who stayed up and watched that whole thing, because good Lord, that was just a slog. It took, and they didn't go to overtime, thank God. It took a little bit over four hours to play that game from
a college football. You know,
they gave up. Oh boy, it was I think about 13. About 1,300 combined yards of offense, Jason.
Yeah, I've always had a problem with the rule in college where the clock stops on the first down.
Right.
I think that leads to a lot of it, because some of these games, especially you got a team losing, you know, 70-0. It's like, you know, oh, first down, stop the clock. No, everybody just wants to go home.
Please, think, keep the clock winding, please.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. The stopping the clock on first down's garbage.
From sitting there and having watched a whole college game now, live for the first time in my life, I can tell you at least from last night's game, that wasn't the issue.
Oh.
They line up so damn quick on offense every play, no matter whether it's successful or unsuccessful, that it doesn't matter. The clock could be winding, and it's not going to matter because they run these plays so fast. Nobody is trying to actually run some offense or huddle up. There, I don't know if I saw a huddle while the clock was running once from either team. They were so busy trying to go hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, because, again, with market inefficiency, you know, sort of similar to the daily fantasy game, these coaches have figured out the market inefficiency. Exploit the defenses as quickly as you can because they're not equipped to stop you. And these two defenses couldn't stop each other at all. Can't stop a nosebleed. Neither one of them could stop a nosebleed. It was just disgusting. Cincinnati lost the game and racked up 750 yards of offense. Those are the losers.
Wow. Wow.
It was crazy. Memphis couldn't stop any throws over the top. It was just drop back, fling it, and watch your guy run and catch it because Memphis can't stop him. And Memphis would come right back with sort of a combination of fling it and run fake with your quarterback and have him run up the middle and untouched. And just back and forth they win and back. And I already had a headache again because of all my health issues. So that sitting there just going back and forth, that now I have a neck ache just from watching. It's like watching a tennis match. Just boop, 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 just back and forth. Back and forth.
Was it even fun to watch, though? I mean,
it was. It was fun to watch, and what was also fun was the atmosphere. It was basically just, it was like they were casting a movie about watching a college football game with all the characters in the stands. So we're in the, we're on the eighth row, and we're down, we're not at midfield, we're about one of the 30-yard lines. And the cast of people surrounding us, I assume is the same cast surrounding if you sat anywhere else in the stadium, because if you go to right in front of me, you got the woman with her two teenage daughters standing up the entire game, yet still managing to not pay attention to the game because she was on her phone the whole time. So I don't know what the deal is there. You're excited to be at the game that you have to stand the whole time and block my view. And yet you're actually not really paying attention to the game because half the time you're taking selfies and you're on your phone. And you're, so you got that end. You go down to my left, and the reason that we couldn't sit in the actual assigned number, and by the way, these aren't seats. These are just metal benches with numbers painted on them, which is kind of quaint and strange at the same time. But the reason we couldn't sit on the numbers that we were assigned was because there was some frazzle-haired college kid sitting on the number that I had, and I didn't feel like, you know, getting into a fight about it, so I just sat, you know, two seats over or whatever. So directly behind him is the, I don't know what you would call him, the hall manager or the section police or what have you, the guy that's just got a ticket like everybody else, but he's been going to those games so long that he knows who's supposed to be sitting where, and he's telling the kid, you can't sit there. You don't have a ticket for that seat. And I'm thinking, how do you know that the kid, but he just knows. He knows everybody in that section. He knows who's supposed to be sitting where. And the kid actually gets up and starts arguing with him and going back and forth. And I expected the kid to eventually pull out a stub or something to show that that's actually his seat. And that's not what happened. The kid says the following sentence to the guy's face, verbatim, and I'm quoting, I'm not embellishing, I'm not making any of this up. The kid says, quote, I'm a student, I can sit wherever the fuck I want, unquote. Like, what? He actually thought that he could just sit in a seat that somebody's paid for just because he happens to be a student at the University of Memphis.
Oh, nice. It's a perk.
Yeah. And the guy's like, no, that's not how it works. I'm sure there's a student section there where you can go sit for free, just like when we were at Whitney Young High School, if we ever wanted to go to a football game, which we never did because they were usually in neighborhoods that we didn't really want to be in.
No. I remember going to see them play one time, and there weren't even stands where they were playing.
Were you standing up?
Yeah, I was at Schur's.
So
we just stood up to the sideline.
Oh, my God.
It was just crap. Just crap. The only time I ever went to one of our football games. I don't even know what compelled me to go. But it wasn't far from my house. That helps.
That's what compelled you to go, I promise you. If it was over on... If it was over at Gailey Stadium over on the west side, you wouldn't have went.
We just got destroyed by... Except for the one year we were there, we actually ripped Lane pretty good.
1 year, huh?
One time. That one time, okay. We ripped Lane pretty good. But generally, we were just getting destroyed by them.
Right. I thought we got destroyed every year I was there, but I guess
we beat them one time. It was a big deal. That's what it was a huge deal. It might have been 7th and 8th grade, one of those years. But it was a huge deal because we beat Lane at football.
Yeah. That would be a huge deal.
And we ripped them. I mean, it wasn't even like a close game. We ripped them pretty good.
Ripped them motherfuckers.
That's right.
So it was like a casting call for a college football game. Directly behind me were two black guys in their 50s or 60s who could barely put a sentence together. And you could tell they were just old football heads. And they were just there just, yeah, get him. That boy fast. Just complete old, probably, you know, never set foot in any college before, much less University of Memphis. And then just scattered all around us were just random people who every time Cincinnati had the ball and they snapped it, just yelled out, "Hit him! Hit him! Hit him!"
I've never been to the Liberty Bowl. Is that a nice facility?
It's quirky.
It looks a bit run down from the outside.
I think they call that charm. I think it's a charming facility is what they
call it. Oh, I thought they called it blight.
That would probably be the Mid-South Coliseum as they get ready to tear it down.
Okay. Yeah, because the pyramid got turned into a Cabela's, if I'm not mistaken.
The pyramid is now a Bass Pro Shop.
Oh, Pro Shop, same thing. Same difference.
Yeah. It's this humongous Bass Pro Shop with all these different things inside of it.
Which
that
just makes
don't belong
no
in a Bass Pro Shop, like a bowling alley and an aquarium and stuff.
Those are things that also don't belong in a pyramid.
Well, I guess what else are you going to do with a big empty pyramid, you know?
You can make it into a Bass Pro Shop.
They paid the money for it.
I guess, you know.
Do what they want. But yeah, that was quite the experience. And now I can say I've experienced a college football game. And my wife, the way she fit into the whole casting for a college movie is they put the lyrics to the Tigers fight song on the board while the band was playing it. And she was singing the fight song. She wasn't looking at the board. She just knows the words to the fight song. She's looking down at her phone, and I just noticed her mouthing the words to the fight song.
Oh, sure. Now, is your wife like an alum? Or
just hilarious because, she never went to the University of Memphis. So.
Got it. Okay. I was about to ask. So she's not an alum?
No. She's my cute little townie.
But she knows her Memphis fight song.
Yeah, he's a little townie like a lot of other people. I'm sure half that stadium didn't go to the university either. And the topper for the casting for the movie was the white guy in two rows in front of me, who every time it was third down on defense gets up and turns around and throws his hands up. Come on, let's go, let's get loud, stand up, come on. When the dance off or whatever on the camera during the timeout, when that happened, he immediately whips his shirt off, and he does not have the physique to be whipping his shirt off.
He starts
doing the whip and the nay-nay and all these other dances you never heard of, and that he really has no business knowing what they are, but he was doing them because that's how crazy, wild and crazy guy he is. And for some unknown reason, every time the Cincinnati Bearcats, every time they would tie the game, his shirt would go back on. And every time the Tigers came back down and untied and took the lead again, there goes the shirt. Shirt goes back off. And I'm like, I don't get it. I don't know why. I just don't know. So So the end of the game comes, and the Bengals are the Bearcats are driving down. It was unbelievable. The Tigers took the lead with like a minute left in the game, and yet the Bearcats still drove down to the Tigers' 20-yard line, had a chance to get a touchdown and tie it back up. When the Tigers finally made a quote-unquote defensive stand and got a sack, and the quarterback for some reason just kind of like threw the ball up in the air in panic, and the Tigers caught it in midair and won the game that way. So
wow. So what was the final? What were we looking at here?
Oh my God. 62 to 55.
What?
63 to
56.
That's
a basketball score.
Yeah.
That's a college basketball score.
Yes, it is.
They knocked those games out in an hour and a half.
You scored 55 points and racked up 750 yards of offense, and you lost the game. That's a college football.
You're not calling your offensive coordinator in for the chat after the game.
I think that's a college football trend, though. I don't even think that's necessarily a Memphis-Cincinnati thing. I think that's what's going on in college football now. I think everyone is trying to put up as many yards and as many points as humanly possible, because that's the way to keep their jobs and succeed. Nobody actually wants to teach football and prepare guys for, you know, like the NFL or anything like that, because it's all about just win games and keep your job. Whoever this coach is for the Tigers, Justin Fuente is his name, he's not the least bit interested in the fact that he's got six guys running around in his secondary, couldn't catch a cold. He doesn't care. Just score points, get yards, keep your job. That's all that matters to these guys. And I'm kind of afraid for the development of NFL talent if this keeps up, because who's going to play defense? If you keep doing this, you're not going to have any defenders developed and ready to play in the NFL. And soon the NFL is going to look like that. You're going to have 700 guys getting 700 yards of offense in the NFL and losing the game.
If you're there scouting for the NFL that game, you're not scouting any defense players out of that. It's just nope. Move on.
And it makes it hard to scout offensive players either, because you don't know what they can do against actual men. Because these are little boys that they're running around. You don't know what they're capable of. So it's hard either way to me. But, yeah, it was very entertaining to watch. But for a real football fan, a little nauseating, I gotta admit.
Could you imagine if that had been an NFL game? You'd been sick watching that.
That's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid in 10 years it might look like that. I really do.
The Roger Goodell vision.
Oh, if this is what it looks like, yes, you're right. Whoever the commissioner is after they throw Goodell out will have the same ideas, I'm sure. We'll want the NFL to look like that, because it's all about excitement. It's all about keeping the eyeballs on the TV screen. And I have to admit, when I watched the tape of the Redskins-Giants game from last night, I got a chance to watch that tonight before you called in. Maybe it shouldn't look like that, man. Maybe it should look like the Tigers and the Bearcats, because that game last night was awful.
That was hard to watch.
Yeah. But the Tigers game was hard to watch, I guess, for a different reason. But I don't know. But hey, I've done it now. I went to a college football game and enjoyed the atmosphere, and the rest of the cast as we're leaving the stadium, you just got random 20-year-old guys running up and going T-I-G-E-R-S Tigers, you know, like they're a real team.
Memphis isn't ranked, are they?
With that defense, hell no.
No, well, I was. I don't know how the computer might just fry if they tried to crunch those numbers. Those numbers are too big.
1,100 yards of total offense. No, I'm underestimating. I think it's like 1,300 actually.
Between the two?
Yeah. 1,300 yards of offense and over 100 points.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. There's no reason for that. It's just, wow.
It was
one school. It's not even like this is Division III.
No, the defense looked like Division III, that's for sure. It really did. But, you know, We had a good time.
Well, it's a thing, and it happened. It's one more college game than I've been to.
Well, there you go. And it took an hour to get out of there, so that's...
Oh, I'm sure. I know where that is. I mean, we have to drive right by it on our way to Brother Juniper's. Oh, Brother Juniper's.
Ah, okay. Yep.
Oh, we missed that place.
Yeah, my wife was asking when you guys are coming down next.
Boy, I don't know. I mean, it won't be this year. Probably, maybe next year. I mean, hoping. We definitely have to get the grandkids down to see their great-grandpa before they don't have any real great-grandpas left, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, hoping next year. I'm hoping next year.
Yeah, we're hoping to get up north. I don't know if we're going to do it next year. We got another cruise coming up next summer, but maybe a year after that.
Oh, up here?
Yeah, I mean,
all
up north.
All the way up here.
Right, up north to Chicago for my folks, and then after like a day or two of rest or something to jump on and drive up the rest of the way to see you guys.
Yeah, because the couple 3 days for the baseball draft doesn't count.
No.
That's a world.
No, that's right. That's seriously just in the city, out of the city in a few days, and you barely know you were there.
And I already know next year for the draft, that's how it's going to be, because I'm basically, I have to be in Chicago or Chicago area for a wedding in May. One of my brothers is getting married, and that's on my anniversary.
Yeah, you broke that news the last show.
Yeah, that's right. And so we're going to have to be in town for that. So that's us, and it's me and the wife and the kids, and that's a major undertaking. So I figure that the trip for April for baseball is just going to be get in, get out, you know.
Right, right.
Drive down Friday, get in quick. Saturday, go to the draft, hang out with you. Sunday, turn around, I'm home.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it's going to be for us.
But it's still the greatest day in sports.
10-hour drive. Ugh.
It's still the greatest day in sports, though. I can't miss it. I just can't miss it, especially now with the team building that we have going underway. And
major undertaking.
All the major undertaking to see all these guys that we traded for and how that all pans out through the offseason. Yeah, we're just starting to get into the juicy parts of ball. Not a lot of baseball right now, because all it is jockeying for position with baseball. Although I still continue to pat myself on the back for my Texas Rangers call. Yeah.
They just keep coming.
The one that looks so bad, too, because I thought I sealed their doom when I said, watch out for the Texas Rangers, and then they went up like 8 of 10. And I thought they were just toast, and now they're sitting 5 games up on Houston's just fading fast.
Right,
wow.
Right. But that's what rookies are supposed to do. That's why, again, the Cubs are so impressive to me, because they're a team.
Like the Cubs should look like the Astros is what you're...
They're a team of rookies, just like the Astros are, except the Astros rookies are doing what rookies do, which is fade down the stretch, and the Cubs rookies are playing like veterans. So I don't know if that's just how great they are, if that's Joe Maddon knowing how to manage them properly, or a combination of all of that. But, yeah, they're going to keep steamrolling. They're going to roll into that one-game playoff, and no one knows what's going to happen there because it's one game. So
that's the trick. I guess it's sort of that great unknown, you know. I guess I have to embrace the randomness of this one-game playoff, because you get into that game, and you win, and you're just like, oh, yeah, you know, you're pumped for the postseason. But you get into that game and lose, I guess I'll take away from it is, hey, we weren't even supposed to get this far. This was the rebuilding sort of year anyways. So I've already made peace with the fact, that they could very easily go into that game and lose. Very easily. You know, I'm thinking longer term here towards some actual division titles and some real shots. Long-term shots, but you can get into that playoff game, and who knows? Absolutely, who knows? You know, we already pretty much know what the pitching matchup is going to be in that game. We pretty much know where the game is going to be. There's no mystery at all in the National League. All the mystery is still in the American League. So the National League, we know exactly what we're going to get. We know it's going to be the Cubs at the Pirates, and whoever wins that is going to go play the Cardinals. This is really, really easy. It's very rudimentary stuff right now. Looks like it's the Rangers in the American League West. It's starting to more and more look like it's going to be Toronto in the East.
Yep.
So basically, we're just shaping up for a Yankees versus somebody in the wild card game.
Yeah, it's coming down to the wire.
Yeah.
Next weekend,
and
the last weekend of baseball,
game,
right?
Go to Kansas City. Yeah. Baseball ends on the 4th. So we've actually got this weekend and then one more weekend after this.
Right.
But in the National League, you're going to have 10 days of meaningless baseball for the most part.
In the World Series,
you may have the Mets and the Dodgers jockeying for who's going to be home field for that series because their records are pretty tight. But that's about it. Nobody's really, because they're tied right now record-wise. Nobody's getting all that excited about who's got home field, the Mets or the Dodgers, except for Mets fans and Dodgers fans. Nobody else gives a shit.
And they better hope it's not a whatever Subway Series, Yankees and Mets, because the World Series is extending into November this year. So,
the season started really late, though.
Yeah.
I don't understand what that was a function of. We didn't even have, a World Baseball Classic or anything.
I don't know why. They did do that on purpose. They did start the season later than normal on purpose, and now they're getting ready to have the World Series. I think if it goes more than, five games or something like that, then it'll be extended in November, so get ready for that.
Nuts. Absolutely nuts.
I do not have the energy to look it up tonight, but I have a new music lyric horror theater ready for you. I'll have to do that on the next show.
Was it with Taylor Swift last time?
That's right. So next show I'll have to do the latest song that sends shivers down my spine when I think about the state of society, that we have songs out there with lyrics like this. I don't know where we're going or what we're doing.
Oh.
But.
Well, I know that myself, as well as Bart Scott.
Can't wait! Yep, can't wait for that, I'm sure. All right, he's Jay, I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy your football this weekend. NFL week number 3 coming up, and we will see you next week.